People's Money by Cory Doctorow, originally published in Forbes magazine, November 2007. Read by Mer Lafferty. Gretel's stall in the dead Walmart off the I-5 in Pico Rivera was not the busiest spot in the place, but that was how she liked it. Time to think was critical to her brand of functional sculpture, and reflection was the scariest commodity of all in 2027. Which is why she was hoping that the venture capitalist would just leave her alone. He wasn't a paying customer, he wasn't a fellow artist, he wanted to buy her, and he was 30 years too late. You know, I pitched you guys in 1999, on Sand Hill Road, one of the founding partners, Kleiner, I think. The guy ate a salad all through my slide deck. When I was done, he wiped his mouth, looked over my shoulder, and told me he didn't think I'd scale. That was it. He didn't even pick up my business card. When I looked back as I was going out the door, I saw him sweep it into the trash with the wrapper from his sandwich. The VC, young with the waxy, sweaty look of someone who ate a lot of GM yogurt to try to patch his biochemistry, shook his head. That wasn't us. We're a franchise, based here in L.A. I just opened up the Inglewood branch, but I can see how that would have soured you on us. Did you ever get your VC? Gretel tossed her tablet with a crash on top of an overflowing barrel of Primo plastics and wiped her hands on the cunningly stitched dress quilted from back pockets of vintage bootleg Levi's, their frayed, misspelled red tags on proud display. Son, that was 1999. Within a year, VCs weren't writing term sheets. They were doing cram downs on anything halfway decent in their portfolios, forcing out the founders, trying to flip them before the market cratered. But it wasn't that pitch that soured me on Sand Hill Road. We're in Inglewood. Yes, you said. What the hell? It was Wednesday, and she had all her week's commissions done already. The VC was at least pretty, if you liked them young. He had good teeth. They all had good teeth now. An acute bump in the bridge of his nose that spoke of a little bit of brawling before his B-school days. Okay, here's the thing. I had running code, 500,000 users. That was big numbers then. We did moderation matching, a heuristic that figured out whether a message on a message board was flame bait, flagging up the worst offenders to volunteers who blindly checked each other. The BBC was hand-moderating 1 million message boards post a day back then. We could do better. But no one thought we'd scale up. Our customers were little guys, hot rodder boards, cooking boards. Most of them were getting everything for free in exchange for serving as our reference customers, which was how all those biz dev weasels did things back then. By 2007, we were Web 2.0. I mean, we'd been Web 2.0 since Web 0.9. But now it seemed like the world was ready for us. All we needed was some capital to pay for the features our freeloading reference customers wanted. I met every single shitweasel, junior analyst, on Sand Hill and brain dumped. They wrote great reports. We got nothing. No one was doing investments then either. It was all acquisition driven. Stupid Sarbanes-Oxley killed IPOs and the VC went with it. The stall across the way was half the size of hers. The old Shenzhen couple that ran it were real gnarly, covered in old burn scars from working in the plastic tag factory where they'd met. Now they sold nostalgic hardware, old working specialty appliances and devices from the WTO's heyday. They were highly complimentary to Gretel's own business, which was why they had such a friendly relationship. The old woman, she called herself Chloe, was giving her a little hand gesture that meant, "Do you need help getting rid of this jerk?" "It's okay," Gretel said to her, waving. "Want to get lunch in 20 minutes?" The old lady rocked back and forth. "Not nutritionist food," she said. Gretel nodded enthusiastically. Nutritionist food wasn't even food, just nutrients and flavoring. It was 80% of the stalls in the food court, since the capital costs of a food printer and feedstock were practically nil, and any food hacker could differentiate himself by thinking up exotic new texture, flavor, temperature combos. 20 minutes, Mr. VC. "Uthe," he said. "Uthe Gonzalez." He passed her a card, laser etched on a jumbo lima bean. She pocketed it. "You'd have thought I'd learned my lesson by then, but no, sir. I'm the original glutton for punishment. After Bubble 2.0, I took my best coders, our CFO, and a dozen of our users and did a little healthcare startup, brokering carbon-neutral medical travel plans to Fortune 500s. Today, that sounds like old hat, but back then, it was sexy. No one seriously believed we could get out from under the HMOs, but between Virgin's cheap bulk ticket sales and the stellar medical deals in Venezuela, Argentina, and Cuba, it was the only cost-effective way. And once the IWWW signed up 80% of the U.S. workforce through World of StarCraft guilds, no employer could afford to skimp on health insurance. The word would go out during that night's raids, and by the morning you'd have picket lines in the front of every branch office. We had all the right connections, but by then I was a 40-year-old woman, and that's as close as you can come to invisible in this society without having brown skirt or a janitor's uniform. I didn't even get a chance to get ignored in the offices. We couldn't even get meetings, not once they found my YASNS profiles and saw what I looked like and the codgers in my social network. So that's when I threw in the towel. I bought a Dremel tool, then a hot glue gun, then a CNC lathe, then a mill, then I got serious. Well, it seems to have worked out for you. The VC leaned over the display cabinet. She saw his reflection in the clear top. His eyes were wide with genuine admiration. Okay, okay, she thought. Okay, you get another 5 minutes, Udhe Gonzalez. She opened the lid and made fortune teller passes over her pieces with her hands. Pick them up, that's what they're for. He went for the fish first. Its scales were individual slices from the skins of old Nokia phones, back when it was just Nokia, not Marvel Comics Mobile. Each articulated its own little sprig of memory wire. The gills were scuffed iPod backings, the logos just recognizable under the fog of scratches. The eyes bore HP and PlayStation logos, respectively, and the lips were made from inner tube strips that bore the smallest recognizable logo marks. As he lifted it, it settled into his hand, arching back to find his thumb and palm nestling in there. It'll work like an old-time phone, she said. It'll even do a little lookup from old-style exchange numbers to different identity registers and try to get you a voice call with someone. Do people really do that? Some do. Most just want it for the objectness of it. It's got a lot of emotion. The scuffs, that's what did it. They were like stories, those scratches, each one a memento mori for some long-dead instant in some stranger's life. He picked up another piece. This one was purely sculptural, made from several generations of iPhones. Their screens were carved into abstract shapes and then painted with networked OLEDs that stitched them together into a single display. The abstract shapes and colors combined with the device's aggressive incursions on your PAN to give the sense of holding a vampire, something transgressive and savage, dangerous. When was the last time you owned a device that felt that dangerous? Never. The VC seemed to surprise himself with his vehemence. He fumbled the device, caught it, set it down reverently. Gretel laughed. Oh, you can be rougher than that. My little critters love adapting to hard circumstances. She tossed the vampire high in the air, let it come down on the floor, having righted itself in the air to take the drop on its armored back. You can't break it. It's made of garbage. The VC fondled each of her pieces, making genuine appreciative noises. She could tell the difference between the genuine article and the fakes. I remember all these things from when I was little, he said at last. I wanted them all so badly. Each one seemed impossibly wonderful and out of reach. Yeah, she said. That's what does it all right. That feeling right there. You watch these go from fetish item to six for a buck in the blister packs at the pharmacy checkout. This gives them back their dignity. Can I ask how many of these you sell? Enough, she said. As many as I can make. I mostly do commissions, but only with people who come down in person. I won't sell online. Getting off email was the best gift I ever gave myself. You are hard to reach, he said. Nope. I'm easy to reach. You just have to haul ass here to Pico Rivera. There's even parking, if you're that kind of pervert. I can see why you aren't interested in capital, he said. You can't scale this up, not with all the money in the world. Gretel laughed. You VCs, scale, 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 it's all you think of. You're wrong, as it turns out. This business decomposes into four elements: materials acquisition, design, fabrication, and retail. They all scale like crazy. Take materials. After the WTO, the Chinese spent 25 years brute-forcing the problem space of all possible 3D plastic objects that an American might pay for. There's no shortage of that stuff. Most of it's sitting in international waters somewhere on a container ship, waiting for someone to pay the carbon taxes to land it somewhere. I can bring in all the junk electronics and chassis and parts that I want, and I print the actuators, controllers, wires, and the rest of it here. Design? Design's easy. Roll the parts through the tumbler and let each one get scanned up good, then run the evolutionary algorithm to see how they can fit together. I just watch it, tweaking it, culling the ugly mutants, cultivating the pretty ones. I can do 50 original designs in a day, and by the time I'm done with any random container, I'll have used up more than 80% of its payload. The rest goes to some feedstockers to be eaten by bacteria. Manufacturing? That's just monkey labor. Easy. Every kid takes shop class nowadays, especially the girls. I made cars for my parents' anniversary, he said. Fuel cell? He snorted. No one wants to drive a truck anymore. Submicro solar, fast little things. He picked up the fish again. And retail, that's just you here. So if you could scale up, why don't you? Why should I? I'm making incredible money now. I could stand to double my operation, but for that I'd need, what, 60 grand? What's the smallest angel round you do at your franchise? We're very nimble. How nimble? He mumbled something. Speak up. 300K, he said, blushing. But it doesn't have to be all to you. We could roll your roundup with 5 or 6 similar firms and increase my communications and bureaucracy overhead by 3,000%. Yeah, that sounds swell. I net enough after expenses that I could double every quarter if I wanted to. But I'm growing organically, cherry-picking my best contractors and getting them on the payroll, expanding poco a poco. I'm 60 years old, Mr. Gonzalez, and I don't need to grow like a tumor anymore. He put the fish back down. It flopped. You say you're nimble, but from where I sit, you're not nimble enough. You're starting off in the 300 grand range, and you're probably averaging $1 million in your angel round. 10 or 20 for Series A, 70 for Series B. I can turn 60 grand into 600 in 6 months. That's pretty good for me as an individual. But I can't turn your million into 10 million, not in 6 years. What does your franchise have under management? We're a gigafund, he said. He managed to make it sound like a boast. She shook her head. You poor, poor boy. How are you going to spend $1 billion in $300,000 increments? You'll be sitting on 3/4 of that by the time you cash out the fund. It's the smallest amount that a franchisee can take, he said. Well, sure, the parent company's got, what, $500 billion under management? Don't look so surprised. Yes, I keep up to date on the shenanigans you Mighty Morphin power brokers get up to in Silly Valley. No wonder they're franchising. But the secret is, big money is dumb money. I can spend $100 so smart that I turn it into $1,500. You look like a smart kid. You could probably make $1,000. But you'll never do the same trick with your billion in other people's money. Whoever sold you that franchise conned you, sonny. He looked glum. Oh, cheer up, she said. You're a young man. Getting shafted by VCs builds character. Look at me. He picked up the fish again. She knew what he was going to ask without having to wait. She named the price. But for you, a 10% discount. He shook his head and put it back. I can't afford that, he said. What are you doing tonight? He cocked an eyebrow at her. Don't worry, I'm not interested in your youthful limbs. I just have a spot on my third shift. One of my girls is pregnant and she's taking some maternity. You pull 6 hours starting at 11 p.m. and you can take that home. I'm not supposed to moonlight. He caressed the fish's scales. They rippled under his fingers. It's due diligence, she said. He smiled. He was very pretty. And he'd built 2 cars. Not bad. He'd do okay. Maybe he'd even work out and end up one of her regulars. Think about it. I close down at 6 p.m. You come by then, if you're interested, and I'll give you the details for the Fabrica. She locked her cabinets and set out her Gone to Lunch sign, then hopped over the display case, vaulting it the way she'd learned to do in yoga acrobatics class in Silver Lake. Lunchtime? Mrs. Huang called to one of her daughters to come out and staff the booth, then came around on her cane. No nutritionist food, she said. Certainly not, Gretel said, sprinkling a wave at the VC as he moved off among the stalls in the dead Walmart.
I have an odd and productive relationship with Forbes magazine. I'm far from a typical Forbes reader, but they've commissioned several articles and this short story from me, and the commissions are always challenging and just weird enough to inspire. Here, the brief was to write about the future of entrepreneurship. I've been thinking a lot about how little it costs to start a business, and how predatory and awful many of the investors I'd met were, and I came up with this, a Socratic dialogue between a startupist and a VC who can't find anyone to take his money.